flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
Can't you see it? The world powered by solar and renewable energy. Here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Jeff Phelps, my buddy Dan Manigan in for Andy today. We go to the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. He's a former Indians pitcher. He's an analyst for the Tampa Bay Rays. He's our good buddy Brian Anderson. Hello, BA.
What's up, buddy?
Well, hello, gentlemen. Not much. On my way back up from Miami, drove down there yesterday. My older son, Jack, was down there looking at a school, you know, potential opportunity to get to play some college baseball starting next fall. So went over there, spent some time with him at the school, the coach, and now I'm driving back to Tampa.
How'd that feel for you?
It was awesome. It was really awesome because I surprised him. He didn't know I was coming. And so I showed up yesterday, and we took the campus tour. We met the coach. Coach was awesome, straight shooter, tremendous program, and, you know, watched practice from the dugout. How about this? Their opening day is today. He was looking at St. Thomas University.
Oh, yeah.
They play today. They've got a doubleheader today starting at 1 o'clock. And I was laughing with the coach. I'm like, you know, I was at Wright State. Our opening series, we would go down to Western Carolina, and that was the third week of February. And here, these guys are starting a month sooner than that. So it's crazy how baseball, man, right around the corner. And in some cases, it starts for real right now.
Wow. I hate hearing how the other half are living. I hate this. Because I'm over here putting on 3 layers to go outside, and you're over here going, oh, yeah, they're starting to play baseball down in Florida.
Well, you can't play a pickup game of baseball up north right now?
I mean, you could. You're not going to get a whole lot of bat speed or arm speed, mostly because you got to throw through 4 layers.
Yeah, or picking up. Nobody's going to bother.
It's just a bunch of people dressed like Ralphie's brother walking around outside.
You know, back home, obviously. And the winter that you all are going through, I can't remember. I can't remember a winter that bad. Between the biting cold and then all of the snow, you know, especially the lake effect, the east side, it has been every time I get an alert on my phone, it's another day of chilly weather. More flurries on the way. We'll let you know how much, when. I mean, it's you guys are just going through it this year. That's crazy.
Yeah, it's been a little out of character as of late. How about you, just before we get into some baseball stuff? Because everything that hit the South, were you south enough that it didn't hit you?
I have trouble even saying this because people in Cleveland right now would say, wow, if it was 52 degrees up here right now, I'd be in shorts and a T-shirt. But, yes, for Tampa, it has been, you know, this whole week, we've not gotten out of like 51, 52 degrees. The lows have been getting down into the 30s, which is very rare. And then, of course, the panhandle. You know, up in Pensacola got 8 inches of snow.
Oh.
Tallahassee got 6 inches of snow.
Whoa.
And the thing is, it stayed. It wasn't an immediate melt-off. What it did is it just compacted and became a thick layer of ice. I mean, they are those towns are shut down in the panhandle right now. Florida doesn't have the resources. I had heard somewhere, or read somewhere, that Governor DeSantis had bought 13 snowplows, and basically it was I-10. Just keep I-10 clear, everybody else, you're on your own. They just don't have the resources down here to deal with it. So the Panhandle is shut down right now.
Holy mackerel. All right, well, you were talking baseball. Mason, you want to talk a little bit baseball. Guards bring in Paul Sewald on a one-year deal with a club option for the year after. It was $7 million for a 35-year-old reliever who throws from a different kind of arm angle, throws it at like that 230 area. I don't want to talk as much Sewald as much as the idea. Are we going to start seeing more and more where these teams are just going to start building these bullpens to be really strong due to the fact that the starting pitching market is just too darn expensive to play in? You think that's where we're heading?
Oh, we're not headed. That's where we are. This has been going on for years. You know, you go back to 2015 when the Kansas City won the World Championship, and that's how they were. Kansas City, you know, they had some good starting pitchers that could give you some length. When I say length, they can give you six innings consistently. But then they had that bullpen built to where if they had the lead through six, the game was over. And that's where it started. That's where it started. Obviously, you know, it's a copycat league. Whether it's football, basketball, baseball, if a system is working, everybody takes notice and they say, you know what, maybe we should start building that way. And that's really when it took over, when you saw those bullpens 10 years ago. And then everybody has been scrambling to do exactly what you said. Build a bullpen that's so strong that if our starter can get 15 outs, boom. And we have a lead, then we can go 1-1-1-1 and shut it right down. Look at what Cleveland did last year with that bullpen. That was it. Give me a lead through five, and the game's over. And more times than not, that was the case. And that is league-wide now. That is league-wide right now.
Does that change any time down the road, B.A.? And if so, how? Would it be young guys are used as starters while they're, you know, on early contracts and not you don't have to pay them a ton? Or is it, you know, are teams just going to invest huge money in starting pitching? Or is this the way it's going to go for a while?
I know Major League Baseball was looking into, like, you know, potential rule changes or incentives to keep starting pitching in the game longer. You know, it used to be a big deal, the starting pitching matchup on a given night. And now, very rarely is it. It's just, okay, two guys are going to go out there and go, you know, 4-plus or 5-plus and then turn it over to the bullpen. And that's the way that the game has been built because of a number of different factors. Number one, these kids coming up from the minor leagues, especially if you're a top prospect, you aren't trained to pitch deep into a game. You know, you've got top prospects in AAA that won't go more than five innings ever. Maybe they only go four, depending on the pitch count. I mean, and they're pitching once a week. Their bodies are not trained to be able to go out there every 5 days and give you 6-plus like they used to. That doesn't exist. So then, you know, I don't want to say you're lowering the expectations, but you're certainly training these guys to be five-inning guys. So when they get to the big leagues, they don't ask them to do anymore. You're a five-inning guy, and then we've got our bullpen. So until you start to even go down to the minor leagues and start to train these guys on how to pitch deeper into a game, how to figure out ways to get hitters out three and four times, it's going to stay the same. So I don't know if they do that by rule changes, incentives. You know, the other day they were talking about where if a pitcher came out, you know, before a certain number of pitches or innings, you would lose your DH for the rest of the game. You know, they're trying to think about different things, and I don't like any of that. I do not like any of that. But they're trying to think of different ways to incentivize going back to where starting pitching matters and it gets deeper into the game. But I don't see that taking hold anytime soon.
And, B.A., you just said what I was going to ask you. You don't like it. As many gimmicks as they've put into the game lately, that even sounds more gimmicky than anything else. Incentivize a guy staying in the game. I mean, if you do that, that just screams running the risk of injury, and it cheapens everything to me.
Well, and not only that, but what about the fact the guy's not having a great day? We're gonna, yeah. You know, I gotta keep my starter in there to keep my DH when he's getting lit. I mean, there are a whole lot of problems that come up from that. That baseball has done enough, and I'll say this. They've done enough really good things to help this game out and to make it more exciting, to make the pace of the game quicker, more action in less time. I love what some of the things that they have done. But then it's like, well, those worked. Well, now what can we do about this? And now it can be overkill. Now you can be attempting to do too much. And I think at the end of the day, you know, baseball is going to be smart enough to not get that gimmicky. I certainly hope so, because then it starts to become not baseball.
The best friend of the show, Brian Anderson, joining us on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. All right, B.A., what do you make out of the Dodgers bringing in Roky Sasaki and then bringing in Tanner Scott on the contract that they've got and this deferred money getting thrown all over the place? Does baseball need to do something about the deferred money being thrown about, or is it just, hey, if you're comfortable with having that money later on down the road, that's on you. Enjoy life.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, I don't blame the Dodgers at all. Now, listen, I know that they've got deeper pockets than maybe anybody in the game, you know, outside of the Yankees. Yankees probably right up there with them. So I understand that. But I also understand that all of these contracts are available to every other team. They can do the same thing. They could do the same thing, and they don't. So what, is that the Dodgers' fault? You know, is that the player's fault to want to be on a team that you know, values winning? And they're willing to sacrifice money up front to be on a winner. Everybody else has a shot at that. And there are plenty of teams out there that are good teams and can be World Series type teams. And they're not doing it. So you can't blame the Dodgers. They're doing business that is allowed, that is free to every other team in the league. And they're choosing not to go down that road. So guess what? That's on them. That you can do the same thing. And quite frankly, if you know, there was a little bit more up front, it may help. But listen, there's so many different ways to put together these contracts and to structure them. But, I understand where people are like, oh, my gosh, you look at the Dodgers, and that is a super team. It is. There's no question about it. But they're doing it within the confines of the rules that are available to every other team out there. And no one else is being as proactive in structuring contracts like the Dodgers. So, You can't fold them. You cannot fold them for them.
Brian Anderson's joining us, former Indians pitcher, one of your former teammates in the Hall of Fame this week, CC Sabathia. That's yes. Terrific. We're very happy for CC. He goes in with Ichiro and Billy Wagner. Ichiro, incredibly deserving. Billy Wagner took him 10 years. Finally, they decided Billy Wagner as a left-handed reliever was good to go, good for Billy. Let me ask you about two guys who aren't there. And one guy, there was a great story written about just a day or two ago. Two of your former teammates, Omar, who, you know, Kenny Lofton, who I think we all know and love, and just doesn't get credit for being the ball player that he was, in my estimation, Brian. Kenny's a Hall of Famer, isn't he?
You know what? I have not broken down and looked at Kenny's numbers. He certainly, the ability that guy had, I think that a guy like Kenny Lofton gets lost on the team that he was on. I mean, look, Albert Bell's a Hall of Famer. He's on that team. I mean, yeah. All of those, you kind of get overshadowed by the fact that you were on a team with, you know, with Tommy, with, you know, with Alomar, with Vizquel, with Albert Bell, with Eddie Murray. I mean, all of these icons. And so you kind of get lost in the shuffle, even though you are and were one of the best center fielders that the game's seen. And on a number of different levels. So I think that he gets overshadowed more than anything. And, you know, Omar, who knows? I've never seen anybody, you know, he could handle the bat without a doubt, but what he did in the field was magician, absolute magician. And it was funny, I remember talking to Omar, at one time, and he's like, look, where I grew up, he's like, we played on the choppiest of fields, and we didn't have gloves. So he said, now I come to the States in professional ball with manicured fields and a glove. I feel like I'm cheating. I mean, that's why he was so good. The hand-eye coordination was incredible. And I'll tell you this, too. The three guys that are getting in the Hall of Fame, let me give you a quick little story on each one of them. I remember Billy Wagner went to Ferrum, and we were in the Cape Cod League at the same time. And I can remember being at a game. I wasn't pitching that game, but we were playing their team. I think he played for Orleans. And he was warming up, and then you could see it from far away that he would throw the ball, and you'd hear a crack, and you're like, I don't know if I saw the ball. It was just a blur. Wow. And he's a little guy. He's short, stocky, but short. And he went out there to start that game. Everybody was saying, you wait till you see this kid's arm. I mean, he just sits at 99. And back then, no one sat up that high. You know, that's a little bit more commonplace now with the velocity training and all that. But he goes out there to start that game, and he finishes his warm-up pitches. He turns around. He walks behind the mound. He relieves himself behind the mound, just complete upchuck.
On the field?
On the field. And wipes his mouth off and gets right back up there and just starts throwing pellets and putting guys down. And that's when you're like, okay, this guy's a little different. He's a little different. And then, of course, he was a starter back then and then transitioned into the bullpen.
Dude puked behind the mound, right? He puked behind the mound.
Puked behind the mound.
Okay.
That's that. There's another one, Ichiro. I can remember one time doing an interview in the dugout at that time it was Jacobs Field. And I'm doing an interview in the dugout, and there's a crowd of people around the cage, and I am watching baseballs get put into areas in right field consistently where Jim Thome would go. And I'm like, who is launching like that? So when the interview was over, I made my way up there to the cage, and it was Ichiro. The power that he never fully showed, that he put on that display during batting practice, I could not believe it. I could not believe that I was seeing. I'm like, that's Ichiro launching balls into those areas out in right field? Are you kidding me? This guy could have been a 30, 40 home run guy if he wanted, but he was a guy that wanted to be a 320 hitter with a huge on base. And yeah, he'd pop you some home runs, but that wasn't his game, even though it very well could have been. But the leverage in his swing and how quick his bat was through the zone, that's what supplied all the power. And again, he's another guy, hand-eye coordination, like you cannot believe. He just was a guy that could put the barrel on the baseball a whole lot more frequently than anybody else in the league. And then Sabathia. You know, when I came back to Cleveland, I think it was 2003, and that was almost like Cleveland was going through a rebuild. You know, Cliff Lee was there, and Casey Blake's our third baseman. Sabathia had established himself as the ace, but he was young. And here I'm an older guy, you know, coming over from Arizona, and I will never forget what a great teammate in spring training, all of that. TC was a gem. He was so good in the clubhouse, such a natural leader throughout all of that. But I can remember the first game that I pitched for Cleveland, and, you know, whatever, the first inning went well. And as I'm coming off the field, he is on the top step greeting me as I come into the dugout. Like you're... It just took me back. Like, this is a young kid who gets it. And here's this, you know, he doesn't know a lot about me at that point. We've been teammates in spring training for, you know, for 5 weeks, whatever it was. And this is my first start. And he was the most encouraging. And he was like that with everybody. Not only, you know, not on top of the fact that he was an absolutely unbelievable Hall of Fame pitcher. And that was early on in his career. But you knew right there that this kid gets it. And where he really took the next step, when he was early in his career, he was dominant on stuff, on fastball slider. And that's how he got things done. When he developed his changeup, that is when he went to the next level. It was incredible to watch. And by that point, I was on different teams. So I'm watching it from afar, but knowing every bit of the talent this kid has. And when he transitioned from fastball slider primarily to fastball slider and his really good changeup, game over. And that's when he shot right to the elite pitchers in baseball. And then his longevity, his stamina, just being able to pitch at that level for so long. You know, what he did when he went to Milwaukee, he basically put that team on his shoulders and carried them to the playoffs. I mean, he was every bit deserving to be in there, but... just a couple of tidbits on those guys. I could not be happier for this year's class.
That's awesome. Mr. Anderson, drive safely. Thanks, buddy.
We'll talk soon.
Yes, sir. Take care, boys.
B.A. Brian Anderson joining us on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline.
So it's a new year, 2025, and you're thinking, how am I going to make this year different? How am I going to build something for myself? But where do I start? Shopify is how you're going to make it happen, and here's how.
Shopify makes it simple to create your brand, open for business, and get your first sale. The best time to start your new business is right now. Get your store up and running easily with thousands of customizable templates, no coding or design skills required. All you need to do is drag and drop. Their powerful social media tools let you connect all your channels and create shoppable posts and help you sell everywhere people scroll. What happens if you don't act now? Will you regret it? What if someone beats you to the idea? Don't kick yourself when you hear this again in a year because you didn't do anything now. With Shopify, your first sale is closer than you think. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to start selling with Shopify today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. On January 17th, Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+, and we can't wait for you guys to see it.
And before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recap podcasts.
Yep. Each weekday beginning January 7th, we'll be dropping an episode featuring exclusive behind-the-scenes tidbits and brilliant insights from our cast and crew and us.
Patricia Arquette, Britt Lauer, Zach Cherry, John Turturro, the list goes on.
All your favorite Lumen employees, their friends, families, enemies, in your feed every single weekday.
And here's the best part. After that, we're going to keep going. Tune in weekly as we recap every episode of season 2. The podcast drops on the same day the episode comes out.
It's the Severance Podcast with Ben and Adam.
On Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
With the Hall of Fame situation, and it's always, to me, it's become something, Dan, that's too harsh. It should be a celebration of somebody's career, and instead it's become this huge debate, and should this guy and shouldn't that guy, and instead of celebrating outstanding baseball players, we have guys who I think are more than worthy having to defend their position and even make their own case. Like they need their own PR firms. And Kenny Lofton is in that situation right now.
Well, you got the people who will always argue for the small hall that we should only have the guys that you truly need to tell the story of baseball should be in the Hall of Fame, and that's it. And then you have the group of people who are like, yeah, I get that. That makes sense. But this is also a celebration of baseball, and you should have your favorite player in the Hall of Fame. And if your favorite player is good enough to be in the Hall of Fame, they should be in the Hall of Fame. And we should let everybody in and maybe not totally go full-blown basketball Hall of Fame where it's like, hey, did you score 20 points a game? Come on in.
Dare I say football Hall of Fame too?
Football's a little more. Like, I feel like football's got it figured out better.
Yeah, but they put so many people in every year regardless.
Yeah, but it's not the basketball Hall of Fame. Where the basketball Hall of Fame is, come on down, you're the next contestant.
You almost need an NBA Hall of Fame.
Right.
Yeah, because there's so many people in the basketball Hall of Fame that people don't know anything about.
Right, and you're looking at it going, Mitch Richmond's a Hall of Famer? Really? Like, Mitch Richmond was really good, but Hall of Famer?
Should Kenny Lofton be in the baseball Hall of Fame?
Yes. Yes, without question, yes. I would put him in before Omar. I have never understood.
That might be on the money, and I think Omar deserves to be there.
I have never understood why Kenny Lofton is not in the Hall of Fame. The guy, you don't even need the advanced metrics to look at it and say that Kenny Lofton belongs into the Hall of Fame. He's unbelievable. He was unbelievably consistent more than anything else. Even as he got older, he was consistent. He was always a player that made your team better. He played gold glove level center field. He moved to left field and played really good defense in left field as well. He was always a great hitter. He was always dynamic on the base
paths. He was a better hitter than you ever thought he was going to be.
The problem was he played in an era where we didn't truly celebrate walks the way that we should. And Kenny Lofton drew a boatload of walks, and it's what made him as great
as he was. Are we celebrating walks?
Yes. We're in an era where at least we're now able to look at this and go, walks are good. What we've been telling Little Leaguers since the beginning of time
are good
is something that how many times at a Little League field do you hear, all right, Timmy, walks as good as a hit. Walks as good as a hit, buddy.
Which
Kenny Lofton embodied that.
Which is true.
Like, we're now at a level where we understand that professional baseball can be played in the same way. Like, yes, Kenny Lofton's a Hall of Famer. It is a joke that he's not in the Hall of Fame.
You know one thing I think that works against Kenny? And I want you to go over some of the metrics because you are Mr. Metric when it comes to this. I honestly think this is detrimental to Kenny's Hall candidacy. He played a long time. He played 17 major league seasons. He played 10 years in Cleveland. Mm-hmm. Okay? 10 years for the Indians. And then 1 year each. Four. Are you ready? 1 year each. He didn't play more than 1 year for any major league team other than the Indians. 1 year each for the Dodgers, Braves, Phillies, White Sox, Pirates, Rangers, Yankees, Cubs, Giants, Astros.
It's a lot of logos on that hat.
That doesn't help you in this situation. No. That's not his fault.
No.
But I think that would work against him.
The other things that work against Kenny Lofton is that he didn't get 3,000 hits. He never got 500 homers. He never got to any of those major metrics that we were looking at for a long time as going, this is the thing that gets you into the Hall of Fame. He never got to any of those. But like, if you look at it as a full career, the guy is a Hall of Famer. And it has offended me to my core that we're living in this age where we're looking at each other going, well, you know, he didn't make it past the first group of sports writers, so Kenny Lofton can't make it. It's like, we know more now. We got Tim Raines in. If Tim Raines is a Hall of Famer, Kenny Lofton's a Hall of Famer.
Kenny led Major League Baseball in steals in 5 straight years.
Yes.
This probably doesn't help him either. When he got to our team, he was 25. You know, he had played a little bit with Houston in 1 year, and then he came to Cleveland. He was already 25 years old. That probably doesn't help either. But Kenny's ability to impact a game, to me, is one of the things. And you don't see those on stat pages. You don't see those even in analytics, Dan. And there's a really good piece out right now. A gentleman named Scott Thompson wrote it. And the headline says, ex-MLB star pleads with Hall of Fame voters to reconsider candidacy. Kenny's quote, I didn't get credit for what I did.
Yes.
I think he's right.
He's right. Because we didn't look at walks as important as they are. And Tim Raines opened the door.
Not even just walks. There's so many. Kenny did things to help your team win.
Yes. Yes. Playing gold glove center field defense is one of those. Stealing bases was another part of those. The fact that the menace that he was on the base pass was another one of those. And the fact that he actually could hit for some pop on top of it. I mean, he was not just a straight slap hitting singles hitter. He hit some doubles. He hit some bombs. He had some pop in that bat. Like, it drives me berserk. It's one of those great unanswerable questions of like, why can the Veterans Committee put in Harold Baines and we can't get Kenny Lofton in?
Well, now see, there you go.
Like,
this is a quote from Kenny in this story. You ready? I can only say all the time that from my era and my time, I did what I was supposed to do. I thought at that time it was very important for me to do my job as a teammate. And that was an important part of the game. I want to get more into this. Kenny has some more to say. I have a buddy who works for a major league team who said something the other day that fits perfectly for Kenny. I'll share that with you next on Baskin and Phelps. Yeah, that was a ding, wasn't it? Menigan in for Baskin today. I'm Jeff Phelps. We're talking about Kenny Lofton. And there's a story out and was written by one of the Fox News services. And Kenny was interviewed for it about Kennedy not being in the Hall of Fame. And Kenny wants to be in the Hall of Fame. I don't blame him. And there are more than a few reasons why he should. And then up there on the X, there's a graphic out there that Kenny's talked about Ichiro Suzuki, and Ichiro just got in. I mean, we all think Ichiro is stunning, right?
Right.
Stunningly good.
And also a Hall of Famer.
And also, without question, a Hall of Famer. And Kenny said, I'm, you know, good for him. He deserves to be in the Hall of Fame. And then somebody put together this graphic. And, Dan, I'm going to list some of those nice analytical numbers that you love so much.
And I'll explain accordingly.
Thank you very much. Let me go over the basics first. Kenny played 500 fewer games than Ichiro, had about 1,000 fewer at bats, 1,500, and had about 600 fewer hits. Kenny had more home runs than Ichiro, more runs batted in, more stolen bases by about 20% more than Ichiro. Batting average was only 12 points lower. Kenny hit .299. On-base percentage, Kenny's was higher than Ichiro's.
That is correct.
Slugging percentage, higher than Ichiro's. Mm-hmm. OPS.
On-base plus slugging. Folks, this is one of those things.
It's the stat that teams look at.
It is. You just take that on-base percentage and add it to the slugging percentage, and if it's above about 750, you're an above-average player. Actually, that's dropped in modern baseball. It's closer to like 725, but you get where I'm
going. Ichiro's was a robust 757.
It shouldn't work, but it works.
Kenny's was 794 more, and OPS plus was the same. Wins above replacement, the WAR stat that you think's a big deal?
OPS plus is a cool one because what that does is it makes league average 100. So that's what makes that stat nice, is it's easier to digest. So if you see OPS plus and like an 100, that means somebody's league average. If it's above, they're above average. If it's below, they're below average.
Well, Kenny and Ichiro are the same on OPS plus.
Yeah.
Wins above replacement, WAR. Mm-hmm. Ichiro 60, Kenny 68.4.
10th highest of center fielders in baseball history. For Kenny Lofton.
And he's not in the Hall of Fame.
The 10th best center fielder in baseball history.
According to that stat.
Above replacement.
Yeah. Which is a vital stat.
It's become a biggie.
Yep.
Though explaining it is exhausting. But just know, it's a big old math problem. There's one of those where all the answers come back out and you're like, oh, darn, these guys are good. Okay.
I have a buddy who works for a major league team, and it's not the Guardians. And I heard him recently tell a bunch of kids, helping coach a younger team. And I thought, oh, that's good. And we're doing some hitting stuff. And he said, guys, when you're in the batter's box, I want you to be as selfish as you want to be. You're in the batter's box. It's about you. Go, hit the ball, drive, get on base, you know, do your thing, hit doubles into the gap. You know, can you hit home runs? Do that. Be selfish in the batter's box. And the minute you get on base, it's all about the team. At that point, what can you do to score a run for your team? What can you do to get in scoring position for your teammate who's coming up behind you so he can get an RBI and you can help your team? And I thought, oh, that's good. That's what Kenny did. That's what Kenny Lofton did in his career. Kenny was a much better hitter than people gave him credit for being. And then when he got on base, oh, my God. I mean, he tormented teams. And, you know, it goes more than scoring from second against Randy Johnson. But that's typical.
Yeah.
And he just, I think that there are some real injustices when it comes to Hall of Fame stuff. And Kenny not being in, to me, is one of them. Omar Vizquel not being in is also one of them.
Kenny Lofton, work counts with the best of them. He was fine with taking walks. He rarely struck out. He got on bases, stole bases on top of it, and then walked out to center field and played Gold Glove level center field. And I know, because I heard it growing up my whole life, oh, you know, he'd get that power swing out and he'd start swinging too hard. Yeah, but it worked for him. And he'd play wall ball a good amount and get doubles and triples and all that stuff off of those as well. I've never understood why he's not in the Hall of Fame. Again, 10th best center fielder ever. Ever.
Ever. Ever. I've got a Kenny Lofton story for you in a second.
Amazing.
Kevin's in Cuyahoga Falls. Kevin.
How you been, Kevin?
Gentlemen, how are we doing today?
Good.
I couldn't agree more with your sentiment that Kenny Lofton is a total myth not being in the Hall of Fame. I mean, I'm in my mid-50s, so obviously the 90s, where I was in my 20s and got to see a whole lot of baseball by that Indians team. And, man, that was an amazing team. And to think, on that team, Kenny Lofton was our leadoff guy. I mean, think about that. I mean, what a team that was. But he was the guy to start us off every single game. I mean, that in itself should say something. But, you know, if you want to dig into the numbers, you know, runs scored, he's over 1,500. He's in the top 65 on that. Mm-hmm. Stolen bases, you guys mentioned, he's over 600. He's 15th best of all time. He's got a 300 batting average. He ran four Gold Gloves in a row. It's amazing. But here's the part I don't understand, because, you know, a lot of times we'll hear about guys, you know, postseason. Postseason stolen bases, he's number one, period, end of story. No one has any more postseason stolen bases than Kenny Lofton. And in run scores, he's fifth all-time ever. So where is that discussion in all this? And the part that kills me, and I don't know if you guys ever noticed it, in the stats I'm reading off, and you know, if you look at it and you go back and look at his career, look at the guys, the names below him, how many of them are already in the Hall of Fame, and he's ahead of those guys. That's the part that kills me when you look at those lists.
Kevin, I agree with you completely. Thanks, Kevin.
It is baffling that he's not in the Hall of Fame. Like, yep. It always has been this way for me, where it's like, we would look at that guy, you would look at what he could do, you would look at the numbers and everything else, and you're like, Kenny Lofton's a Hall of Famer, and yet he couldn't even get on the Veterans Committee ballot. Like, he's not even there. And it's like, what are we all watching? What are we all looking at that we can't get Kenny Lofton into the Hall of Fame after we're putting in, you know, all sorts of guys who have no business. And look, Harold Baines was a wonderful player and a wonderful person on top of that. And I hate having to perpetually use his name as like the benchmark. But it's like,
if Harold's in,
he's the definition of Hall of very good. He is a very good player, and he was a very good player for a long time. And it's like, no, we're talking the Hall of Fame. We're talking the best players that have ever played this game. And if you can't put the 10th best center fielder of all time in the Hall of Fame, then what in God's green earth are we doing here?
Good Kenny Lofton story for you, okay? It's 1993, getting ready to do an Indians special on working at Channel 43, okay? Kenny is getting ready to go into his second year, and I thought, this could be fun. So I did a story on Kenny being a two-sport guy, because he actually played basketball at the University of Arizona. Yeah, he was either the sixth man or the starting point guard. And I knew a guy who played on his team at Arizona, and that guy's name was Steve Kerr. So we're covering spring training, and I got passes to go watch the Magic play, because Steve was playing for the Magic at that time. He was just there a very little bit of time. So, and I had arranged with the Magic to go, and so I talk to Steve about Kenny as a basketball player.
That's cool.
And Steve just, you know, Steve loved the guy and said he was an incredible basketball player and everything else. And he said, but we knew he played baseball, but he didn't play a whole lot of baseball. But, you know, we knew he was a two-sport guy. And so that was kind of cool. I found some video in Tucson where, you know, your University of Arizona is. I called the TV station there, and they sent me video of Kenny playing baseball. And it was a story that was done by a young Tucson reporter by the name of Dan Hicks.
Oh, my gosh.
And I thought, hey, wait a minute, that's Dan Hicks on that. Okay.
Wow.
So then I went to talk to Kenny about it. And, you know, Kenny was a little ornery, maybe.
That's a word.
I always got along great with him.
Yeah.
Because, you know, Kenny had this tough persona.
He had an ego to him.
But, and that's okay. Good for him. But he had this little tough persona. He and I always got along fine. And I said, hey, we're doing this. I said, I went to the Magic game. I talked to Steve. And he said, did you really? I said, yeah. And I said, and I got some video of you playing baseball at Arizona. Because he didn't play baseball at Arizona, but like for like two games.
Wow.
And he said, you couldn't have gotten video of me playing baseball at Arizona because I didn't do it. And I said, well, not much. And he went, yeah, like one or two games. I said, yeah, I got it. He went, you did? I said, yeah. All right, well, there's really not any video. No, there is, and it's in my hand. I've got the video.
That's some big boy capital J journalism out of you. That's
so we did this story, and it was really cool. And Kenny was really good at basketball. I mean, imagine his athleticism as a point guard. And that's what he was. But I always enjoyed dealing with Kenny. And it was always kind of back and forth, because Kenny, you know, Kenny wasn't warm and fuzzy. He still isn't. He's been on our show a couple of times. And he's great. And he's really smart. And I just wish the guy could get into the Hall of Fame, because I certainly think he deserves it. Does Will Howard deserve to be an NFL quarterback? Dan's going to ask that question to the gentleman who joins us next, Tim May from Letterman Row, joining us on Baskin and Phelps as he's still basking in the glory of Ohio State winning a national championship.